truck.
And we are recording.
And we've got three hot mics. You know what that means?
What does that mean, Caleb?
That means we have a special guest.
Hooray! And you know, and it's kind of different, man, because normally we have like a subject matter expert that's going to review a topic. But this time we're doing it really different. We have a student that's going to review a topic with us.
And who is this student? Who are you, student?
I am Ashton Spence, and I am from the Mississippi School for Math and Science.
Well, hello.
Hi.
Welcome.
Yeah, why are you here, Ashton? What's the deal?
Because I'm asking y'all questions, and you're asking me questions, and then I have to act like you're my dad.
Hey, are you recording right now?
I think so.
Oh, you're recording too at the same time?
Oh, no, I'm not recording.
Okay,
though.
I was about to say.
You need to ask us a question about recording, though, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Do I have permission to record y'all even though you're recording me?
This feels really meta.
It is. It does feel kind of interesting because I do know this because I've been in a few legal battles that I actually know that you don't have to ask that question or to one party.
I don't have
consent.
To.
However, you do have my permission to record me.
Yeah, I don't actually have to include it in the podcast, but I have to ask you, which doesn't make any sense.
Oh, well,
so.
we're gonna make it. It's gonna be part. It's gonna be on our tape. We got it.
Yeah,
you've got
it's
my.
It's on the record.
Good. You have record. My permission and Mississippi School of Math and Science.
I'm waiting for the other person to.
Oh yeah. Okay. So you officially have my permission to use the tape that we're recording of you for your school project.
Wow.
That was all pretty right. Good, huh?
A little bit of why we're coming here. We've
True.
Got a school project, and I think it's really cool. So we're going to have actually two podcasts that are going to get made out of this.
Yeah,
I'm really excited about it because I love education. I love you know, kind of seeing this younger generation. I'm seeing a lot of. There's something about this younger generation that is very entrepreneurial.
Mm.
Would you say that, Chris? Is that something that you recognize?
I feel like they're more gig oriented, you know, which is certainly a derivative of entrepreneurship.
A derivative,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
What do you so define that? Meaning,
oh well, so
project related.
Yeah, you know, the whole idea of Uber and TaskRabbit and DoorDash and all those things. The idea
yeah.
of I'm going to do this particular task, and get compensated, and I may or may not rinse and repeat.
I mean,
that's a type of entrepreneurship. You know, it's not necessarily full blown self employment.
It's almost like owning a coffee shop.
How so?
I don't know. I kind of feel sometimes like it's gig oriented from day to day or hour to hour. At least sometimes my motivation behind it. But anyway, hey, speaking of that, we usually do a mystery drink. Ashton has already had his drink. It's the same. It's the Chris. What'd you think of that?
It is really good. I'm kind of sad that it's named what it is, but it's
wow.
pretty good.
Well, it's named the Sun Beach.
Yeah.
That's a better name.
But this one is a special one, the Chris Sun Beach.
It's got my own little flair on it.
Because it's poured over with the Sprite. But it's pretty good, huh?
So does that mean that he's the Sprite?
Yeah, he changed the recipe a little bit
for the better,
fine-tuned it, and it is really good. So, you know, when we have a listener that comes in and they order the Chris, we know exactly what they mean. We've got one called the Meemaw. She's got her own little special
thing.
Oh, that's
right. Yeah, I forgot about that.
And so, anyway, but we do have a new mystery food item I wanted y'all to taste. This is our new beignet. This is a banana nut beignet.
Sweet.
Is this what you were advertising on TikTok?
This is what I was. This is what I was advertising. My saying was, "Don't be ignorant. Try our new beignets.
It's nice and hot."
Because it's spelled like "be ignorant," and I don't know if people in Columbia anyway. I look at it when we go, "What's a be ignorant?" But actually,
man,
French.
This is good, dude.
Is ignorant a word?
This is good.
Well, it's that's the way I think.
Is that like how Colombians spell like ignorant?
Well, it's probably the way I would say it. Don't be ignorant.
Well, and don't be mean. All right, let's eat this food. It's good.
Yeah, well, you got a young person, so we know we'll get candid feedback.
You're
going to
get
from
that teenage condescension.
I was thinking of like pretending like I was going to throw it up like that one guy did.
Yeah, Rick, no.
I didn't even tell him about it. Rick McCluskey
set a bad precedent.
I was going to do it. I didn't even tell him about it. And then I changed my mind because I was going to feel bad
for him. Caleb, I got to tell you, dude,
I got something for you, Rick, next time I see you, just for doing that.
This is good.
So you said this is a banana now?
Banana nut beignet.
Man, that's good.
Got a little Bernard's honey. We like Bernard's honey is who I use. Some powdered sugar. Man, that's good stuff. Good.
Yeah, dude. Yep. So, Zach, I apologize, but you're probably going to have to edit the eating sounds because this is quality. Because I don't think I'm going to stop. I'm going to keep snacking on this.
Man, snack away. I'm glad
Please
to hear
keep
you
my
like
eating
it.
Sounds
I think,
Zach.
You know, we've been doing bagels. The bagels set are really just now starting to gain some traction. We actually started with the beignets literally just today. We did kind of a buy one, get one free thing, and man, we blew it up. And so this may be one of those next little things that really kind of sets Coffee House up.
Did you get on to the whole like king cake thing? Were you selling king cakes here?
No, we haven't done that. I'm careful on things like that. There's a lot of people that have some really good ones, and so I really like teaming with other people on things. I may reach out to Robert St. John's and Loblolly to see if we can.
Man, they were good, dude. I had one over there. Mm.
They are killing it. We're actually hopefully going to be reaching out to them and see if we have them on our next season. Been reaching out to a few other people. We're going to have some good upcoming interviews next season that in the lineup starting in the summertime. And anyway, that's about all that's going on here. I'm glad y'all like it.
Absolutely.
Let's get started.
All right. So here's
what we got today.
So Caleb, I'm going to tell you what I think is going on because Ashton, I'm going to need you to weigh in on this. But so as a junior at Mississippi State, Mississippi School of Math and Science, you're working on a project that deals with brain drain in the state of Mississippi, correct?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so obviously that parlays very well with the SIPI project. So we thought, well, hey, if you're going to be interviewing us about brain drain, we're going to interview you, kind of.
Yeah.
And we're just all going to talk about it on the record.
Yeah. Funny enough, it's for an NPR student challenge, so I will be submitting it to NPR.
And, oh, really?
I don't remember if it was last year or the year before. It may have been 2023. There was a student that year from MSMS that won it. It's a national competition, so like I think more than 2,000 entries had been submitted across the country, and she won it talking about the Jackson water crisis.
Interesting.
Because for our class specifically, we're limited to talking about something that is relevant to Mississippi.
Yeah.
Which you kind of have to use some creative liberty to find something that's kind of interesting and about Mississippi at the same time.
Hey.
No, you do. And so I was kind of impressed that person was able to turn the Jackson water crisis into a really well-edited podcast. Ended up winning the whole thing, and NPR came and interviewed them. They did a podcast on her. I think it was like The Daily Show or something that she was on. So that was pretty cool, and I'm kind of hoping that maybe this might get somewhere, or at the very least, I'll get
it. Yeah, maybe they'll send us some of that NPR money if Trump hadn't cut it all off.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming you got some number of questions you want to ask us about brain drain in Mississippi. What we'll probably do is, as you begin to fire a couple, we'll just kind of conversationally fire back with some of the stuff that we were wondering about. Is that fair?
Sure.
All right, well, then start it off, Ashton. Show us what we're doing.
Okay, well, can y'all introduce yourselves and just name and job for me?
I'm gonna let you go first.
Oh, okay. That's you right when I try to put a banana in my mouth. So I am Chris Spence.
Do you have any relation to me?
AKA father of Ashton. Professionally speaking, I think my title is consultant. So yeah, that's what I'm doing these days.
I used to call you a business psychiatrist, didn't I?
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be honest, that's a lot of the work I do.
Yeah.
But I mean, effectively, not officially. What about you, other person?
My name is Caleb Brown. I am the owner of Coffee House Columbia, a small little family coffee shop, and also the co-owner of Herstory Home B&B. And those are the main two things that I can speak about right now. I like doing startups because I'm crazy.
Glutton for punishment.
I'm a glutton for punishment.
Yeah, after the whole Mocha the Mule thing, I kind of interpreted that.
Oh yeah, Mocha the Mule. That's a discussion for another day. Maybe we'll get into that sometime soon.
Yeah, well, you know, we need to circle back on it to see
how Mocha the Mule's doing.
What?
I mean, yeah. I walked in and I saw it, and I felt like.
You felt like you knew him, like a superstar.
Like it was like I had known it from like TikTok that, and then the other podcast episodes, and I was like, "Wow, I'm finally going to
see." That means
it's
working.
Yeah, okay. Truth in advertising.
That means Mocha you know? Do what he do.
All right, so fire question off, okay. Ashton.
All right. So when y'all were young and growing up, what did you originally want to be? Like, what did you want to do for your job?
Yeah. So I'm assuming maybe like a lot of kids, but I remember just being young and saying that I wanted to be a welder because my father was a welder and owned a fabrication shop. And I remember saying that, and I actually was in that career, owned a fabrication shop, but then also worked for two different companies in that industry for 20 plus years. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So this is the part where Zach gets frustrated and he has to edit all these eating sounds. So for me, it probably happened around 5 or 6 years old because I was outside playing and there was this family member that said I should go paint rocks. Now, in retrospect, I think they were just trying to get me out of the house. And stay
knowing
occupied.
You, that would make sense.
Yeah, you know. But I thought, like, literally, I should go outside and paint rocks. So I went outside, painted rocks, and then we had some kin show up. I don't know, maybe a week later, and they were so impressed that they gave me money for it.
Oh,
and they bought my painted rocks. And I remember, as a 5 or 6 year old, I was astounded that I could go outside. Take a rock, do something to it, and people would give me money. And after that, it was like, okay, I want to be self-employed. I want to figure out how to turn things into money. And you know, from there, it went to like selling plants, and then grew that till we had my own hot house that actually burned up. That's another story for another time. And then by the time I was a teenager...
Would you have a marijuana farm or something, Chris? What
no,
were you growing?
It was just like all kind of potted plants.
I remember you telling me this.
Yeah, because by that point, my parents had like a country grocery store, and I could take it and grow the plants at home. And when I got big enough, I could sell them at the store.
What kind of plants were you?
All kinds of flowers. Yeah. And
really?
Some small trees, stuff like that. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I thought I was going to be a botanist. I got into it so much.
Really?
Until my hot house burned down. And then after that, all my plants died. And I didn't care about botany anymore after that. But the idea of finding something, doing something to it, and increasing the value of it.
Interesting.
Just changed my whole life. And from that point forward, it was just different things. And I ended up getting into tech, you know, but the same premise was there. What can I do with technology to turn that into money?
Yeah.
And so, there you go.
Cool.
What about you, Ashton? I mean, here you are, a junior in high school. Are you starting to have any thoughts about what you want to do?
Nope.
Nice.
I've been asked this question at least 20 times in the past 2 weeks alone, and I think I have, like, a I have a scripted response at this point, just ready, and it's like, I have no clue, and I don't plan on having a clue for a good bit.
Well, so it's interesting that you say that, because you have to be considering something going to where you're going to school at, because tell our listeners about Mississippi School of Math and Science. It's not like just anybody can go there.
So it's a public state funded school, but you have to apply to get in there, and it's an advanced school. It's not just for math and science. It's STEM focused, but all the other programs like the composition and the arts and all that, those classes are really well. It's just like a very advanced school, and I don't remember, but I know they accept around 40% of their applicants, so it's not an easy place to get into. The kids there are really, really smart, and a lot of them are really driven. You were talking about like what kind of people wanted, what they wanted to do when they were young earlier, and a lot of these kids kind of already have it figured out because they've been so advanced in their curriculum and their classes since they were young that they kind of just like, oh, I want to go build a spaceship when I grow up or something like that. And I'm not.
Does it give you any anxiety if a lot of your classmates already?
It does for a little bit, and then I go to my room and play War Thunder, and then it goes away.
So, there we go.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to like this interview after all.
I think it's okay. I mean, I'm about to be 49, and I don't know what I want to do yet either. And I'll let you know one day. But it sounds like you've got your options open. You're certainly not a lazy person to be doing the things that you're doing.
At least not academically, huh?
That's subjective.
I don't think I'm going to like this interview.
That's really subjective. I don't procrastinate, but I don't probably put in as much effort into school as I could. I don't cheat. But it's like when there are a lot of opportunities, because MSMS, I mean, it's like college early. Like, it's really advanced. And
because you live on campus. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not living at home.
All the lifestyle, the clubs, just everything's really just like college early. There's not very much to it that makes it seem like it's an actual high school. And with that, there's so many different things you can do there and when you go from there that you can prepare for early. And I'm just not super interested or motivated to kind of insert myself into those opportunities, because like my dad's always bugging me about improving my ACT score and stuff. That's probably the best example. And to be honest, like, I know I probably should and I probably could, but I don't know. It's just stuff like that's like, it's not a priority is what I think I would say.
Tell me about the podcast. Tell me about. I want to hear about like the social life and like and the fact that you're podcasting. I'm assuming you're a fan of podcasts. Tell me about how that's going and do you like it?
He introduced me to podcasts when I was little. I mean, I remember back at Lake Castle when I was like 4 on the rides, we would listen to NPR, and it was like, it was one of your various business podcasts that we'd listen to. And it was that old guy that had like a very kind of soothing voice.
Well, that narrows it down for NPR.
Yeah. That and Kai Rizdahl. I mean,
the Marketplace.
Kai, Kai was the other one, but it was a different guy that would do, and he would have like the soft piano and whatever. I don't remember the name of it. but we would listen to that every morning. And then like around 2015, 2016, we got into Radiolab, and then later on Heavyweight and Science Versus. And I mean, we've just been listening to podcasts with him like all the time because we're on the road a lot. And so that's where I wouldn't say I got into podcasts, but he definitely introduced me to them and made it to where like I did find them kind of interesting. And for this project, as I said, we're doing it because our university composition class, our final exam grade is this podcast, and we put it together. We do it on a topic that's relevant to Mississippi, and we base it off of a research paper that we've already written and turned in. That was turned in about a week or two ago, and it was on the same topic, the brain drain, for me at least. And we kind of used the skills that we learned from a previous assignment where we made like a podcast for fun, and we make a for real one, which is this one, and we submit it to the NPR, but it's also graded by our teacher for our final exam grade, which is
so
really
comforting.
So
explain to me exactly what brain drain is.
Okay.
What's the actual, is there like a clinical definition for it?
So there's two different kinds of brain drains. There's net brain drain and gross brain drain. Gross brain drain is just like normal brain drain. It's when anybody that's educated or skilled or professional at their job, they leave the place that they grew up and earned their education in. That's gross brain drain is just when any number of those kinds of people leave that area. Net brain drain is when the number of those kinds of people leaving outnumbers the number of those same kinds of people entering that same place. So it's just like a deficit of intellectual and professional workers.
And to be clear, you're defining brain drain as people with a college education? Is that the criteria?
Kind of like, yeah, you could say that. That's kind of subjective. But for this case, a lot of the sources that I use define these kind of skilled laborers as, or young skilled laborers as, anybody 25 and up with at least a bachelor's degree.
Okay.
So I'm afraid of what the answer to this question is going to be, but what has your research yielded so far? How are we doing in Mississippi?
Well, we definitely have an issue, that's for sure. That's why this whole podcast exists. But as I've read up on different sources and tried to figure out how we can solve it and turn it around, it's kind of given me a perspective change, because so then the normal attitude towards it is like, you know, Mississippi's poor, a lot of the people there are dumb, and it's just going to be that way forever. And there is some truth to the poor part, but we have our share of the population that is smart is really low. That is true. We rank 49th out of all 50 states, the last state being West Virginia. We are like 10 points below the average of a share of those kinds of people that I told you about. But the share of the people that we lose to brain drain every year is actually around the same as every other state in the southern region. So basically, we lose the same amount of skilled laborers as all the other states in the region. The difference and the reason why we're actually suffering is because we don't have any brain gain. There's no real pull factors that are pulling people into the state. You know, nobody graduates from Vanderbilt or Stanford or Harvard and thinks, yeah, I want to go work in the Delta. Like, it's just, that's the more common attitude, and that's what's the real problem, because it's not so much that we're really pushing people away, it's just that they're not even interested in coming here because either the job market's bad or the kind of education that they're getting isn't relevant to here in Mississippi, or the infrastructure is poor, all that kinds of stuff. And I guess you could say that we're pushing them away because of that, but at the same time, we're not really inviting those kinds of people in, and that's why we're having these issues.
What do you think, like, from your perspective and or from what has your research provided any possible solutions to how to reverse this?
There's a few things. I mean, obviously the core of it all is that we have to focus on pulling people in rather than keeping people that we have already here, like containing them, because it's not going to work, and that usually is counterproductive. What we need to be working on is pulling people from other states, and that means, you know, and just trying to think. Our job market is really tailored towards agriculture, and you don't go to Harvard or any of those places to really learn about agriculture. We don't have a good finance market. I know Dad was talking about how when he earned his business degree, there wasn't really much of a job opportunity there or job opportunity here for people with degrees like that. So we need to open up those kinds of markets. Maybe that means inviting big Fortune 500 firms over here. Because, by the way, we don't have any of those headquartered here in Mississippi. That's another big thing, is that we're one of the very few states to not have a single Fortune 500 company headquartered in the state. Bringing those kinds of big firms and companies in would open up for different kinds of professional skilled jobs coming into the state, and then that means more kinds of those people coming into the state, and then just more revenue and economic growth.
What can I guess my thoughts are, is this are politicians not making it attractive for Fortune 500 companies to come here?
I'm not sure about what they're doing with those companies specifically, but I would assume not. Because I know another one of the big things is that we really struggle with urbanization. The biggest city we have is Jackson, and I mean, just recently they were going through their own kinds of issues, which actually affected the whole state, because when the state's biggest capital city, which has been on a steady decline in population, experiences a water crisis and all kinds of infrastructure issues, that kind of makes everybody just a little worried and ends up leaving the state altogether. And that's kind of what happened, and that had a pretty big economic effect, bigger than it may have seemed. So we kind of need to work on just going from just rural farmland all over the place to maybe building up some, you know, small cities, increasing the infrastructure in those areas, and then over time those kinds of big companies may settle into those places, and then everything else will follow.
And to, you know, to that end, so hey, we told you coming into this we're gonna have questions for you.
Yeah. Yeah,
but you also got to bounce back with other questions you have, you know, for your project. So like, are there any questions on this particular topic before we change gears or what?
Yeah, I have some questions. So,
well, hop in, man. Come on.
So earlier I asked y'all what did y'all want to be when you grew up. I guess I should also ask, regarding what y'all wanted to be when you grew up, did you plan on working long term in Mississippi, or did you kind of have it in your mind that you'd eventually head out of state?
Well, I mean, I think Caleb was playing pro ball, so I'm curious how you answer that, because I'm not even sure if Mississippi was even on your radar, huh?
Yeah, so interestingly enough, when I did a project when I was probably in about fifth or sixth grade, and I picked Mississippi. We were not doing state like book reports, and I had always had a fascination with Mississippi, interestingly enough.
But you were living in Texas, though.
I was living in Texas. Okay. I was born and raised in Texas. When I got drafted out of high school, and so that, you know, getting drafted obviously kind of really puts you on the radar with schools all over the place. And then when I got drafted the second time out of junior college, that even put me on the microscope more. But when I started getting recruited over here in the East, Mississippi, Southern Miss was the last place that I'd actually went and visited and got a call from. And when I came and visited, it was the first time I'd actually even been to Mississippi. Like, for me, it was like, yeah, I'm coming to Mississippi. I loved it. I can't explain exactly what it was about it. Maybe it was the pretty girls. So, I mean, I came here from the outside, but Mississippi was not on the radar at all up until, you know, getting recruited to, you know, come here for college.
Yeah, for me, I feel like I do a disservice if I'm not brutally honest, so I'll go ahead and be blunt. I didn't really know what my options were, and so I went to a very rural, I think at the time we were 3A high school. We technically, officially had a guidance counselor, but, and this is no offense to that person, but she was very accustomed to telling us about how we were going to grow up to do tractor repair or be a butcher or go into the military. And it was very ag focused, ag centric. And while there's nothing wrong with that, there was something wrong with that being your only option.
Yeah.
Because that seemed like we were all routed into trades or the military. And so I didn't even know that higher education was something we could do. You know, I came from a traditional, very small school, very small town in Mississippi. And I found out about things like graduate school after the fact. And so it was a very iterative process because I just really didn't know. The only counterbalance we had, like literally the only counterbalance we had, was for people that are familiar with South Mississippi, they may know of this 6,000-acre campus called the Stennis Space Center. It's where NASA is in Mississippi. And that brought a different type of opportunity. And so that brought people with skilled engineering backgrounds to talk to us and tell us about, well, actually, there's other things you can do if you don't want to do trades. And that was kind of the catalyst that helped even pointing me in the direction of asking the questions, because it's not that I didn't know the answer. I didn't even know the question in terms of what other opportunities could be. Had I not had that exposure, I don't know what would have happened, because they came to our high school, and I'm going to date myself a little bit, but they came to our high school, they being some NASA engineers, and participated in a thing called Net Day 97. So in 1997, some NASA engineers came to our rural high school and said, hey, there's this thing called the internet. Y'all need to get connected to it. And we were like, what's that? And so they came to the location. There was me and one other guy that actually knew about that kind of stuff. And they invited us to work with them and kind of changed my life, my whole trajectory, to be honest.
Yeah, I didn't even think about Stennis, but that's really probably the best example of what I'm trying to talk about, because before them, like, you're right, a lot of the schools tried to help their students find jobs here in the state, which was a pretty valiant attempt. But the problem is that instead of trying to change the job market, they tried to encourage it and put all these kids into agriculture and trade schools, and where the money isn't really, that's not there anymore. It hasn't been there for a while. And even though you'll be in high demand for an engineering job here in Mississippi, it's still, you know, those kinds of jobs won't pay as much as some of the other kinds of job degrees and all that that are found all over the place everywhere else. And so when Stennis came in, I mean, that was huge, because now if you wanted to say, oh, well, I want to help build spaceships, you don't actually have to leave Mississippi for that now.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
One of the kinds of things that we need, where we need those new kinds of job sectors coming into the state to put more variety in the market and to open up for bigger revenue job sectors.
And some of our listeners may go, now, wait a second, there's a resurgence of trades at the macro level, and they would be right. At the macro level, so if you look at this in terms of the entire U.S., there's a steep demand, you know, for plumbers, HVAC technicians,
welders,
exactly. And that is all true. I think the point that I just wanted to be clear on is that just like it would be wrong to steer people away from trades, it's wrong to steer everyone to trades. We got to have that diversification of workforce or we suffer.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and so my next question was, and you kind of touched on this earlier, what was your entrepreneurial journey in Mississippi like? What kind of obstacles did you face, and would you say, as of right now, it was all worth it, whatever you ended up doing?
Wow, there's a few things packaged into that. Caleb, I'm curious, you go first on this, because your entrepreneurial journey has been fascinating.
Between the two of y'all, it's pretty different, pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we spoke on early on with our podcast about side hustles and having side hustles, and I'd always had different things that I had done on the side, and my wife, and so we kind of dabbled in that, and a lot of that really just stemmed from, I guess, if I'm going to be brutally honest, like, I don't like being told what to do.
I can't relate.
I don't know, maybe I'm a horrible employee, but I'm just, I didn't, I'm like, man, I just didn't think like this is it. Like I looked at so I loved Sale. I loved the field that I was in, but I also just kept looking around going like, is this it? I saw so many, I guess, colleagues maybe that were older than me, and I just saw a lot of things, I guess, from a discriminatory, like a discriminatory problem that would happen. It would be ageism. These older guys, you get at a certain age and they phasing them out. And, or, you know, just the thought that you're supposed to work at this place forever and then retire. And their whole identity was wrapped up in doing this thing for this other company. And I saw a lot of people just really lose themselves when retirement happened. And so watching that really kind of scared me. And then so that's why I'm like, I've got to figure, there's got to be something else. And so I guess that's why I was always dabbling in doing other things. And I can't get into the details of everything, of how I'm at where I'm at right now. But, I had to. I literally had to. I was in the same career for 20-something years, and something had to give. I had to start doing something different. And so that's part of my journey. And then the next thing was, I also have to say, like, I never would have picked what I'm doing, like coffee. Like, it's just something that kind of came to me. There was no plans. Just some things happened and moved, and and I love what I'm doing. I mean, so for me, it's a faith perspective that I really do think that just the Lord kind of put some things and put some people into my life. And at least for right now, that's what I'm doing. And then the other part of the journey is doing something with my wife and getting to encourage her and watch her be gifted at something. And so I think that's maybe where my gift is. I'm really good at recognizing other people's gifts and encouraging them in that. And that's kind of how my journey has came to where it's at this point. And then we got a podcast too. So
I've heard of it.
Yeah.
It's doing well.
Sippy.
So my podcast is going to,
it's going to dominate. It's going to kill it. There you go. So, you know, I started off telling you about how, even as a child, I enjoyed entrepreneurship. I just didn't know that's what it was called. And then by the time I got into high school, oh man, I was making more money over the weekend doing my own thing than what I was making in an entire week pushing buggies at Walmart, because that was my traditional job. And that kind of hit me like a ton of bricks, because I was thinking, wait, I'm making more money in a weekend doing my own thing than an entire week working for someone else. And that really got my wheels turning. But I got an opportunity, a pretty lucrative opportunity, to go work out at Stennis Space Center for one of the contractors out there. And I kind of thought I was going to be a company man there for a while, because they treated me well. The thing that I did not see coming, though, was that I didn't understand how working for really big companies work in terms of upward mobility. And I very soon, by the time I was in my early 20s, I would look around a conference table and I would be the only one that just didn't have gray hair. And it, you know, Caleb touched on the topic of ageism. It slapped me in the face, man. I mean, one guy was visibly angry that I was at this meeting. He even said, "Why is this kid here?" And so I began to get just discriminated against. I mean, to be honest, I mean, it was what it was. And so I found that it was beginning to affect my upward mobility, and it really all kind of came to a head when this one particular company I was working for at the time, they brought me into their HR office and said, "Chris, we got a problem." And I said, "Okay, what's going on?" They said, quote, "You're getting promoted too fast." And I didn't even comprehend that. I didn't even understand how that could be a thing. And so I said, "Well, I'm doing the work that's being assigned to me. I'm doing the projects that's being assigned to me." And they said, "Well, yeah, that's great. And we appreciate it.
That's the problem."
But that's the problem. And I'm going, "What?" I mean, I tried not to come across as a jerk, but I was just genuinely confused. I didn't even understand what I was doing in the office
meeting with these people from California. And so I said, I said, I'm not even sure what you want me to do. Are you saying you don't want me to do my job? And they were like, no. We want you to keep doing your job. We just can't promote you anymore for a while. And I said, well, what is a while? And they said, 3 years. And I said, wait. So you're telling me I got to do the same type of work and even more work as the 3 years goes by, but you can't pay me for it because, quote, I'm getting promoted too fast. And they were like, yeah, basically. And I was like, all right, well, here's my resignation. And
that day.
Well, I mean, that's a very abridged version. I mean, technically, it's actually the real.
Like in your head, you're like, you're knowing that this is.
I mean, to be honest, Caleb, the longer version is even worse than that. The longer version was in that meeting, I asked them, is there anything we can do? And they said, you could actually go back and get a graduate degree. And I said, what does that have to do with anything? Because I was doing engineering work for them. And they said, well, there's this, you know, because big company, big policies. And they said, well, we have this rule where if you have a graduate degree, then you can get a fast track and still get promoted without this barrier. The problem was that because all of my stuff was in tech, I didn't take any classes in business in my undergrad. And so I said, well, so then I can just basically take a sabbatical and I can go. And they go, no, you still got to work full time.
And go to school.
But you got to get your master's degree after hours. And I said, well, when I do the math on this, if I can't go on a sabbatical, it's going to take me 3 years then because I'll be doing this after hours.
They're like, exactly.
And that was another response. They said, exactly. So it was basically 3 years or 3 years. And so I said, okay, so would you pay for it? And they said, oh, yeah, we'll pay for your graduate degree. Yeah. And I said, all right, well, then I'm gonna go get my MBA. And so I went and got my MBA. It took 3 years, literally. And man, the day that my graduation date was set, I went back to the manager and said, okay, I've sucked it up and I've worked full time plus for 3 years. And then at night, I would go drive to the university or to their distance learning facility, depending upon the class.
Hour and a half drive.
Oh, yeah.
3 hours.
Oh, yeah.
Place.
Yeah. And so, but I've done it. And here's the paperwork. Here are my transcripts. Here's my date that I walk for graduation. And I'll have my MBA. And now it's time to give me that promotion. And I'll never forget the guy, my manager, that I was telling this to. He said, well, Chris, here's the thing. The way we see it, it was your prior manager that made that deal with you. And as you know, he's no longer with the company. So the way we see it, we don't really have to honor that commitment. And I'm like, okay, the way I see it is I'm tendering my resignation today. And so, yeah, that was the final kick in the pants I needed to focus on self-employment.
Nice.
So there you go.
I remember that story.
Yeah, it was an eventful time. What else you got for us, Ashton?
Okay. So, considering you host a podcast that seeks to guide self-employed people in Mississippi, what have been some of the most common problems that you've seen other entrepreneurs face in the state, specifically?
Oh, man. Well, so, for our listeners, it'd be really interesting if there are people out there that this is their first episode they've ever heard. So, hey, listener. If this is the first episode you've ever heard of Sippy, this is just a different episode. You know, so we encourage you to check out the catalog.
The best episode. Yeah.
See what I'm saying? It's the best episode. So, you know, we try to base this entire podcast around the premise of a project. And our project is to try to make rural entrepreneurship feel less lonely. I mean, just full stop. Because the fact of the matter is that if you are someone that has tried to be an entrepreneur in the past, if you're contemplating it for the future, if you're going through the grind in the present, it doesn't really matter. You know what it's like, and it's lonely, and it's hard, and most people can't relate, even your spouse, even your parents. It can be a very lonely journey. And so the point of this podcast and the project surrounding it is to try to help people find their tribe. And so I would say that we're talking to people that already know how hard it can be
we're hoping to connect them with like-minded individuals. And so they can immediately find out, I'm not some colossal failure. I'm not doing things hopelessly wrong. It just turns out it's hard. That doesn't mean you're wrong. That doesn't mean your business is bad. This is what hard feels like, and that's okay. And this becomes an encouraging salvo, we hope, to let people know that hard doesn't mean wrong. Hard just means hard, and let's do hard together.
So you'd say it's long and strenuous. Is there any specific problems that Mississippi's brain drain issue has caused that have made
Absolutely. I mean, if you're asking that question through the lens of brain drain, I mean, I've seen it for years. You know, so I started my consultancy in 2011. So I don't know, I've been doing this 14 years now, which is kind of crazy. And I have seen all the versions of it at the macro and the micro level. I mean, I in its largest extreme, and, you know, Ashton, I got to do a little bit of non-disclosure agreement dance here, but there was one very large company, like Fortune 100 company, that tried to do a big project in Mississippi, and I was a part of it, and it was a multi-million dollar project, and it required hiring a specific number of a certain type of engineers, and we couldn't do it.
With Mississippi State and
Caleb, I was on the front lines of this. I remember being on calls trying to woo engineers out of Silicon Valley, California in general, out of Denver.
What type of engineering?
Mechanical? Heavy tech. Heavy in tech. And we would get them all excited. The compensation was there. The perks were there. The retirement package was there. The moment they heard it was in Mississippi, they were like, oh, that's a hard no. And
so
they
it was the stigma?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I mean, and after it happened numerous times, not once or twice, finally I just became a little emboldened. And I just began to ask them on the interview, because I knew they were about to shut it down anyway, so what do I have to lose? And I would say, you know, what if you don't mind me asking, what is the problem? They're like, we're not coming to Mississippi. And then I would go, well, why? And it would be a combination of fact and myth.
Yeah.
Because
probably a lot of myth.
There was a lot of myth. I mean, because unfortunately, there were a fair number of people that thought it's like Mississippi burning here and we still have segregation. It was shocking, actually, the number of people that thought we still had segregation. So I was like, okay, you've never
Everybody
been
wears
here.
Overalls.
Right. You know, we all have a banjo. And
depends on what part you're in.
And so there was definitely some myths that had to be busted. But there were some facts, though. And some of the facts were, they're, quote, nothing to do. Well, I mean, relative to L.A. or the Valley, yeah, there are less things to do. But it just depends on what your baseline is against. I mean, there's, in absolute terms, that's not true that there's nothing to do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we're not a Chicago or an L.A. or Dallas or an Austin. I mean, we're not in any of those places. So, but it ends up becoming this massive chicken or egg problem.
Yeah.
Because if we can't get the talent here, we're not going to generate the tax base to have all these wonderful attractions to bring the talent here. And so, I mean, I could go on and on. But yeah, Ashton, through that lens, I would say that was a huge problem.
Yeah, I would say the standard's it's a tiny bit low when we're all celebrating getting a Buc-ee's near Gulfport.
Yeah.
Hey. Oh, we're like, Buc-ee's, that's like,
and
I am for real celebrating.
It feels like a historic moment.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm celebrating that for real. But that's why, right? I mean, this is the first Buc-ee's gas station, which feels funny even calling it a gas station, that I think Mississippi's getting the first, you know? So
yeah,
we celebrate our victories, but the problem is our victories aren't very, very big relative to some other areas. So that would say, oh, and by the way, in case you're wondering, that contract failed, by the way. We ended up not being able to get enough engineers, and we lost the contract. On a micro level, I see it very clearly for startups that are trying to recruit and retain. So they need to get the best and brightest to move their startups forward. And even if they are well-funded, to recruit and retain top talent, it's tough. Because in most cases, not all, but in most cases, that top talent doesn't already live here. So recruitment means we're trying to pull you from your other state, and in some cases pull you from your home state. Now, it's way easier if that top talent lives here, because then we're not pulling them from their family, or we're not having to say you need to uproot your whole family. But we end up creating a bunch of logistical challenges because, unfortunately, we don't have that talent here. So it is recruit and retain, not just retain, as evidenced by your brain drain.
Yeah, because that's what I was saying. We struggle with pulling people from other states to come here.
Yeah, you contrast that. Think about it if we were in New York, okay? If you're trying to recruit really well-educated, experienced engineering talent, for example, they're probably already there. And so for them, it's just they're changing a different block in the same city. So logistically, they're taking a different train to work, you know? And so that's a very different ask for someone and their whole family than to say, well, no. Not only are we not in your city, relative to New York and California, we're on the other side of the country. So don't just uproot yourself, uproot your entire family. And I've seen some people also firsthand where the family was just like, no, we don't care what you're getting paid. And that talent is having to commute via plane back and forth because the talent was like, my family literally won't come. And so it's, brain drain's a real thing, and it's really hard to bring them back once they leave.
Are we retaining our out of our universities that are like, are we keeping the ones that are graduating out of Ole Miss, Southern Miss, Mississippi
State? It's bad. I mean, it's bad. You know what I mean?
So largely, a lot of those are leaving the state.
So Enterprise Journal actually did a study on this, and they were saying that for University of Mississippi and MSU, they have the worst records of keeping Mississippi students in the state after graduation. Their retention rates were like 52% and 58% respectively, which is like the worst in the country. So that's really, really bad when we finally train STEM, in particular, is what we're really talking about, STEM folks, healthcare folks, and then they're like, nah, we're still leaving.
You know, all the tax investment that went into the education just for them to end up leaving.
Yeah, matter of fact, Ashton made the comment about how Mississippi had ranked 48th among all the states to lose its share of population. 49th.
West Virginia was the...
So where that's actually coming from is from the Mississippi Institute of Higher Education. That's the study that Ashton was referring to, because I thought I would read up on that. And yeah, you're talking like 22% in 2020 is being retained.
It's 10 points below the national average.
I mean, that's horrible if you think about it, because it's big enough of a problem to get students to see the value in a college education, especially when you consider how expensive it is nowadays. But how much worse is it when you finally can get kids into undergraduate and graduate STEM, and then we still lose them?
Yeah.
And so it's bad enough for them not to even begin, but then we get some that get into it and they still leave.
Yeah.
That's tough. That's really tough.
All right. Is there anything that you have to say on
go back to the first question on what did you, it was something about what we saw since we started the podcast, the biggest challenge.
Yeah, what were the obstacles?
Yeah, so I think speaking personally, but then also just from the people that we've had on, financial literacy, which I think was very important, which is one of the premises when Chris and I got together. Obviously, we kind of wanted there to be, you know, this thing called edutainment, to where, you know, Chris was bringing some of this financial literacy and teaching content, because it's not just something that I need. I think it's something that he recognizes. And surprisingly, just because you're an entrepreneur doesn't mean that you're just financially literate. So I think that is a challenge, an obstacle. And then we've recently on specifically sales, on just getting entrepreneurs getting out and promoting themselves, promoting their widget, promoting their product, promoting their thing. I would say are the two biggest obstacles that I recognize since we've been starting started doing the podcast, and that more that we speak to other people, that's, it seems to be true. But that, that's the biggest obstacle that I recognize.
Yeah. All right. So you kind of mentioned this earlier when you were saying that people didn't want to come into Mississippi because there wasn't much to do and the job market wasn't good for them. Why do you think so many young people, young skilled laborers in Mississippi that are already here want to leave? What are some push factors there?
Well, so in the context of young people wanting to leave, a lot of it's just because of opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, like now, sure, there is some percentage that just want a change of pace, want to see what the rest of the country has to offer or the rest of the world, which is totally fine. I mean, but that's true of everybody thinks about that from their hometown and their home state. So that's that, no matter where you live, some people want to see what the rest of the world and the rest of the country is like, and that's fine. Mississippi's problem gets exacerbated, though, because if you don't have that craving to get out and see what the rest of the country is like, then you have to look around locally. And the problem is, when you look around locally, you don't see much, especially for the compensation that you need.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of times it's just a lack of opportunity. Now, granted, in a bittersweet way, COVID has helped because COVID forced our domestic economy to do more telecommuting.
Yeah.
And so then all of a sudden people saw, well, hey, I can live in Mississippi and it costs nowhere near way as much. Less. And I can still get these big job opportunities if I can do it from home. And that definitely helped, especially for the parts of the state that have access to high-speed internet. Because, I mean, we can't take that for granted. That's not true of all of the state. But we're now, fast forward almost 5 years later, we're starting to see the rebound of that, and more major employers are announcing come-to-work policy changes. And that can be problematic, considering, as you pointed out earlier, Mississippi isn't known for having Fortune 500 headquarters here. So,
yeah, and then so I'm seeing. So I did a lot of stuff in my career in the trades and educating in the trades, and there's still such a big need for people that are in the trades. There's people that are not doing it, and then a lot of people that are getting there. Trade, they're not staying in Mississippi either. They're going off on the road and not staying here because those manufacturing jobs aren't here. So that's something that I...
So that was push factors. What do you think, briefly, we could do to increase our pull factors? What could we do to pull people in from other states?
I think a large part of it is know what we are and know what we aren't and kind of lean into the things that we do have. You know, because, for example... one of the things we don't have is a traffic problem. One of the things we don't have is a pollution problem. One of the things we don't have is an overcrowding problem and a housing problem. And so if we can lean in to what we do have to offer, then we can begin to recruit and retain. The byproduct, though, of that is that at least right now, what we are recruiting and retaining in terms of the type of jobs that we're talking about that are desired, a lot of it is going to be remote work, because Caleb brought up the topic about we don't have a lot of manufacturing opportunities. That's true. Relative to other states, we just don't. We have some, but just nowhere near what we need.
Yeah.
And so then the question becomes, if we can create an infrastructure for people to work remotely and go after those competitive jobs, assuming they remain remote, then all of a sudden Mississippi can be very attractive because, you know, we do have things going for ourselves. We've got way more fiber connectivity than what we've had ever. Our housing market relative to other states is still among the most affordable in the country. And certainly we have, we're part of the Southern hospitality. I mean, it's a different pace that can be very attractive if you're used to and you want to take a break from the grind of major cities where you spend way too long stuck in traffic on 16 lanes of freeway or riding the subway and hating life. I mean, you know, we do offer some things that can be attractive so long as people can connect to that gainful employment remotely.
Mm-hmm. So in a broad sense, do either of you think that this brain gain issue Mississippi will ever be solved? And if so, do you think it'll be within the near future?
Maybe if something happens within our capital, and I think we've got to do things to make it attractive for companies to want to come here. I just don't see that happening. Maybe they're trying. Maybe there's some major brain drain from the political spectrum. I don't know. But it seems like we could be doing a better job of trying to get manufacturing companies to come here, because we actually do have a lot to offer. There's some things that we could do. And you know, we'll see what happens from that end. But not to get political, it's not a Republican Democrat thing. They all pretty much suck. And so that's just my personal opinion. But I'm gonna just say that from the local level to even local mayors and political systems have issue. You know, they could do things to make things attractive for manufacturing to come in to their local cities. From the state level, they could be doing things. I would like to see some more aggressive policies on trying to make it more lucrative for businesses to want to even come here. I think that we do have a lot to offer. I don't know if that's the total solution, but it sure would be a good start. It seems that I think we shoot ourselves in the foot a lot.
Yeah, unfortunately, it is going to require a more public-private partnership type of projects, which is tricky considering the current administration. They don't really seem interested in investing more capital into those type of things. And the reason why I bring that up is because the only alternative to public-private partnerships is when you have a massive amount of private capital. And unfortunately, on the list of things we are not known for, we are not known for a state that has a lot of private capital. So we don't have venture capital. We don't have private equity. We don't have investment banks. We don't have hedge funds. So since we don't have those things, there's not a lot of influx of private capital to create these type of large-scale employment opportunities, which means in the absence of that in the commercial sector, you have to go and get it in the public sector in some way. And so that's way easier said than done. So no, to answer your question bluntly, I don't see it changing anytime soon.
Okay.
I'm cautiously optimistic, though. I'm hearing some things of somebody that may be running for governor. Maybe.
I think maybe they'll be able to do something. The rise in entrepreneurship, because, I mean, Dad, you got to meet one of my friends at MSMS that's like, I mean, you probably love to have him as a pupil. He's like, he's the definition of entrepreneur, like that. He wants to run his own business and everything. When he grows up, he kind of knows from the start what he already plans on doing, stuff like that. And he's not the only one, I think, across the wide range of Mississippi. And I think that there's been more of those people in recent history than there have been before in Mississippi. And so if that keeps going upward, maybe more of those kinds of people would want to stay here and create new kinds of job markets here.
Well, that gets to the whole myth side, though, doesn't it? Because, I mean, I think about the school that you're going to. So Mississippi School of Math and Science is legit. I mean, it's made me a believer now that I've gone up there and had a chance to learn more about the faculty and the programs. And Caleb, one of the things that really surprised me about it is they have this thing called Reveal Day. So every year, at the end of the school year, the seniors, they're all required to wear these lab coats, and they get out in this public area of the campus, and on the count of three, they take a picture of the graduating class taking off their lab coats, and you see underneath what schools they got into.
And so you can look and see prior graduating classes, and they're getting into elite schools, mm-hmm. you know, across the country. And it really struck me looking at these pictures of all these graduating classes, because every year Mississippi is producing people that are getting into the Ivies and the elites. And I'm going, oh, man, can they just come back when they're done? Like, they need to go. That's great. But please come back when you're done, because we need you. We need your help here. You know, I mean, Caleb, a lot of times you close for us on prayer. And I think about that Bible verse, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few.
Yeah, yeah.
I say this to all of our listeners in the most loving way. But the fact of the matter is that if you're not a part of a solution, you're part of the problem. Like, you know, if you take everything the state has to offer and then you leave, well, you're contributing to the brain drain. And I get opportunities being outside of the state. I get that. Trust me, I get that. What I would encourage people to do is to consider, try to create the same opportunity here within the state. And it's going to be hard, and that's okay. But that is how we start turning the ship around.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and close this out. Lord Jesus, we just we thank you for Ashton and what you're doing in his life. Thank you for his brain. And Lord, we lift him up. We thank you for the Mississippi School of Math and Science and educating these young people. And Lord, we lift up all of those listeners and all of those students and everybody and the teachers in that program. And we just thank you so much for sending us your son to die for us and to die for all of them. And we thank you for Mississippi. Thank you for making this beautiful state. Lord, be with our politicians. Be with all of our entrepreneurs that are out there listening. We thank you for everything that they do to tune in to us every week. Thank you so much for loving us. Teach us to love you better. In your holy name we pray, Jesus. Amen.
Are you intrigued by today's discussion? Want to hear some more? Great. Stay tuned, because you can listen to any episode of the Sippy Podcast with Chris and Caleb by going to sippypodcast.com. That's sippipodcast.com. Or maybe you'd like to give us some feedback or share some thoughts that piqued your interest during our discussion. If so, that's even better. Send us an email to feedback@sippypodcast.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and have a blessed day.